Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's the same advice that I give to people today. A restaurant is a living, breathing thing that will cost you more money, more time, more sweat than you could have ever imagined. Mm. And unless and until you are absolutely comfortable with every facet of that business, do not go into it for yourself.
Hi, welcome to the Modern Waiter Podcast. I'm Marlon Joseph, the Modern Waiter, where we discuss all things restaurant business, learn something, laugh at something. On today's episode, it's restaurant advice I wish someone told me with Chef Ashish Alfred. But first, the intro.
Tired of working deadbeat jobs for lame pay. I'm tired of getting fired and hired the same day. If you know the rules of the game, then you'll stay. And if you...
As usual, I'm joined by my good friend Danny DeVilla.
What's up, what's up, what's up, people?
Chef, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You're fresh off the plane.
Fresh out of that South Florida traffic. happy to be here.
Thank you for making the time for us.
Thank you for having me.
And speaking of time, the way we're going to handle this show is, let's say that you travel back in time to the beginning of your restaurant career, and then you're going to give yourself the advice that you have the privilege of
knowing now.
Sure.
Correct. And so how did your restaurant career start? Where were you? What happened? What happened to you? Who hurt you?
You know, I mean, if I have really had to take it like way, way back, my first gig, I was 15 years old. I got a job hosting at a place called Fontina Grill. And it was a way to get out of school early. Ah. So if you got a job, your senior year of high school, if you got a job, you could leave early as long as you were going to that job and working a certain number of hours. So that was the beginning of my restaurant career. That was the first time that I got cussed out by a waiter. That was the first time that I got cussed out by a patron that wanted their table. That was the first time that I had a crush on the really pretty hostess. So that was the beginning of it.
I agree with everything he just said. I'm sure I've cursed out hostesses.
I've been mean to some hosts.
Yeah. And I've seen the look on their face after they've gotten murdered by a guest.
Oh, yeah. And you feel so bad for them because, like, in the totem pole of restaurants, right, as far as, like, training goes, they get the least.
Oh, for real. It is the least amount of training.
They
just get thrown to the wolves.
The most thankless job. But there's so much nuance to it, right? It's more than just, let me take you to your table.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot. I mean, that door better be clean. There better not be any cigarette butts outside. You better seat these fucking servers in order, otherwise somebody's slashing your fucking tires after work.
You're the ultimate handler.
Oh, yeah. You hold the cards. You got the money. You hold the cards.
That's true. I got to be nice to my hosts.
Yeah.
So after...
About 15, 16 years old.
16, yeah. What's your next foray?
So my next foray, I went to go work at a Starbucks, which I really enjoyed. I was a little baby barista.
Okay.
It was back when Starbucks still made real coffee. It was when they still had the proper coffee machines and they ground the beans in house and you had to like fill up the portafilter the right way. Now they hit a button for double, the button for single.
They still had a soul.
Yes. I left there. I got into the nightlife business. I was a bar back.
Very different.
Very, very different.
Got you.
The
money changes.
The lifestyle changes. Yeah.
The lifestyle changes. You know, the kind of problems that you end up dealing with change. Also, it was my first taste of like dealing with the big egos, right? Because these bartenders, especially in the places where I'm bar backing, I mean, we're talking nightclubs, college bars, whatever. I mean, these guys are like, every single one of them thinks they're fucking Tom Cruise from Cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. And they can clean nothing for themselves. So you're cleaning up after them all night long, cleaning their mess, sometimes counting their money, sometimes buying their drugs. It was
restaurant stuff.
Yeah, restaurant stuff.
Selling them, buying them, whatever you need to do.
Yep. I learned through that job working in a college bar, I had a knack for talking to people, dealing with people. So I got a gig working the door in a couple places. You know, super simple, weed out the bad from the good. Mm-hmm. You know, try to keep the troublemakers out, try to keep the ones that are having a good time in. Yeah. And fortunately for me, there was three guys behind me that all weighed, you know, 250, 260 apiece. So people usually wanted to listen to me.
there you go.
Got into nightlife a little bit. Left that. Worked in Baltimore nightclubs, DC nightclubs. All the while, not really behaving well. So
living your best life.
Living my best life. Yeah. Well, my worst life at the time.
But, that's worse. It's relative.
especially
for the age.
I couch surfed for a little while and ended up back on mom's couch, as we do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, mom was like, you know, you gotta get a piece of paper that says you know how to do something. So I was like, fuck it, I'll go to culinary school. It's New York City. Worst case scenario, I'll get to spend 6-9 months partying and having a good time. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
So I went to New York City, stayed there for a while, got through school, did really well. Surprisingly enough, nobody thought I'd do well. You know, I got there and my mom was like, hang on a minute. My son's got to be here at 6:45 in the morning in uniform. He's got to be here till 3 p.m. and he's got to hold a job for which he doesn't get paid. No chance. How do I get my money back when he fucks this up? But despite all odds, it went really well. It went really well for me. Still had, you know, kind of a bad habit or two, but went really well. Got some great internships in the city. Mm-hmm. And then it was time to come back home. I came back home and mom helped me get into my first restaurant, which was a disaster.
Working or owning, being the man?
Being owning. The man.
Okay.
Being the man.
Let's start there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What advice would you give yourself now to that person who opened that restaurant?
Yes.
It's the same advice that I give to people today. A restaurant is a living, breathing thing that will cost you more money, more time, more sweat than you could have ever imagined. Mm. And unless and until you are absolutely comfortable with every facet of that business, do not go into it for yourself. Because it will test you every goddamn day.
Okay.
That's the advice I would have given.
The short form advice,
would have said, don't fucking do it. You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. But now, you know, I'm on the heels of an internship with Danielle Ballou. So I'm like, oh, well, I know how to do this. Little do I fucking know. Danielle's got millions of dollars of funding behind him. Mm-hmm. He's got years and years of restaurant experience behind him. He's got a name. I've got barely even a concept. I can't even afford to put a sign out front. We've got a banner hanging from two of the windows. So you don't even, there's no substitute for experience. You know, no matter how good your concept, no matter how hard you're willing to work, no matter what connections you think you may have, there's no substitute for experience. You learn in this business, I think more than any others, you learn by doing.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
So that was your first...
That was my first.
Your first foray.
My first foray.
What happens after that?
After that, I did clean up. I took some steps for myself to change my life a little bit. And
okay.
I came back.
That sounds like code for something.
Code for rehab.
Okay.
Code for rehab. So came back and I opened my first Duck Duck Goose.
Okay.
And
tell us about it.
Man, it was a restaurant dream. It was a restaurateur's dream. It was a young chef's dream.
Okay.
It was a restaurant that should have been my first restaurant. 27 seats, 1,000 square feet, open kitchen. I could see the entire floor from where I stood.
Yeah.
So it gave me the opportunity to embrace the service as much as the food.
Okay. So you're at Duck Duck Goose, and we're hitting the time machine button again. Mm-hmm. Right when you're starting, what advice do you give yourself then?
Man, that's a good question. When I first opened Duck Duck Goose, I would have told myself, you know, everything in due time.
Okay. Patience.
Patience.
Okay. Patience. I was going to ask you, I was going to say, you know, because with time and as you grow and with growth, you become more patient with certain things and you become less, you know, because when you're first, you're younger, you're bang, you know, you're all in.
Let's go, let's get it.
Yeah, let's go, let's go get it. Let's see it, let's make it happen, which is, that's why you do those things. And it gives you exactly where you want to be.
Yep.
At the same time, when you step back from it, you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the growth comes.
100%. Because for me at that young age, I wanted more and more and more and more and more. And I I would get frustrated thinking, you know, why am I not getting a review yet? Why hasn't this happened for me yet? Why hasn't that happened for me yet? And you said something today and it immediately put my mind at ease when I called you and I said, hey, I'm running late getting down here. And you're like, listen, calm mind. Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And man, if I'm not living proof that everything happens for a reason.
There you go.
If I would have gotten everything I wanted when I wanted it, I probably wouldn't be here before you today. I would have told myself back then just to be a little bit more patient with my team, patient with myself, patient for just the natural evolution of like the universe and how things are supposed to go. And with the understanding that anything that's for you cannot be taken from you.
True. True. I find that everything has a momentum, mm-hmm. right? So when you're in a situation that you want to change so bad, you have to acknowledge the fact that your whole mindset from before, everything that you created before is still coming to you.
Yeah.
So you have to let that momentum die.
Yep. Yeah.
So that you have the birth of whatever your new life.
For sure.
Your
new chapter, all the above.
Yeah, your new chapter and things like that. So
for sure.
So Duck Duck Coos, the perfect restaurant for the first second restaurant.
Yeah, the first second restaurant, yeah. We saw a lot of success there. We were open for about 3-4 years and the opportunity came up in Baltimore. I had always loved Baltimore. I spent a lot of time there growing up.
Okay.
It was a beautiful corner space in a very historic part of the city. And we said, let's open our second Duck Duck Goose.
Okay.
So we opened there to rave reviews. It went really well, kind of right out of the gate.
Nice.
We were super lucky. We were super lucky. And we worked really hard. You know, it's not all luck. Duck Duck Goose opened, then pandemic hits, you know, about 2 years later, pandemic hits.
I'm interested.
Yeah, how did you pivot?
Not just how did you
how pivot. How did we all pivot?
How did you feel at the beginning?
At the beginning of?
The pandemic. I mean, because you have employees, you have rental space, you have a restaurant, you have a life. How did you feel?
I think confused. Right. Like I speak for others other than myself. What the fuck was going on?
Yeah, nobody knew.
Yeah. You know, especially as restaurant people, we've only known one way to live, you know, from the time that I was a 23-year-old intern, you know, in culinary school. You wake up, you get dressed, you go to work, mm-hmm. you work. If you can be open, you're open.
True.
So for me, it was just this confusion of like, what do I do with my time?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when is enough enough? Like in the sense that, okay, you can sit inside, you can sit outside, but masks on, outside, but masks on.
That is confusing.
It was just this constant frustration of not knowing how to operate.
Yeah.
And you know, these ideas where people are like, well, I'm going to open my restaurant as a convenience store. I'm not fucking doing that.
Mm.
Nothing against the people that did, but in my mind, I was like, that's not what I got into this for. I'm a chef.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to do this. So a lot of gut check after gut check after gut check. Okay. Yeah, it was really hard. It was really hard.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Now, pandemic hits. What happens?
Pandemic hits. We managed to make it through. We saved both of those restaurants. We through the help of our customers and really my staff, some of whom worked for a paycheck, for no paycheck. When we had to close the original place that I had first opened,
mm-hmm.
my purveyors are not going to want to hear this, but I ordered a U.S. Foods truck for $6,000 because I didn't know when we were going to be allowed to reopen.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I could work it out with the creditor later on.
Gotcha.
So I ordered a U.S. Foods truck for $6,000. I ordered as much frozen like meat and starch and whatever I could get. I had the staff of all the restaurants come in. And I said, take what you want.
Okay.
Because I didn't know when they'd be able to come back to work or where these people would find work again.
Yeah.
So got that order, shut that restaurant down. Now I am delivery driver / waiter / phone answerer / chef.
You're doing it all, yeah.
Doing it all. With a handful of people that stuck by me. Like I said, some of them for a paycheck, some of them for no paycheck. They knew some weeks they'd get paid, some weeks they wouldn't, but they were around.
Mm.
Partially because what the fuck else were they going to do?
Yeah.
And also because they really believed that things would turn around. Mm-hmm. And they stood by me for my entire career.
Nice.
Pandemic hits. And we just got through it the best way we knew how. You know, applied for the loans, To-go, Uber Eats, came out swinging against Uber Eats once in a big way. I mean, it was funny because I uploaded the video to TikTok, and it was just, I had no idea it was going to go as viral as it did. And it was just, it was more of a question. I was just asking people, do you know how much, because people are buying this food. People are coming by to buy gift cards from the restaurant just because they want to see the restaurant stay open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I felt like people had no idea how much of their money was going to Uber Eats.
Yeah.
So when people found out that up to 30% of their money was going to Uber Eats, and then when people started breaking down what the restaurant really gets, and then you take out food costs and labor costs and everything else, people were pissed.
Oh, for sure.
People were pissed. And it was on the heels of that video, somewhat on the heels of that video, that we were able to affect some change. Baltimore City, they put a cap on it at 15%.
Okay.
California, I think, capped it at 10 or 15% as well. Some other municipalities would not, but a lot of governments stepped in and they said, listen, like, if you guys want to operate here, if Uber Eats, Grubhub, DoorDash want to operate here, you could cap this at 15%.
Yeah.
Which helped a lot. I mean, it's half.
That's insane. Now, you have a couple of restaurants. What would you tell? There's a thing in business that says you hire for your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Are you aligned with that thought of hiring for your weaknesses, or what are your thoughts on that?
I think that as a leader, you have to be aware of what you're not good at. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to, like, check your ego a little bit, which is huge in the restaurant industry.
Nobody wants chefs.
It's huge for chefs. and people don't want to tell you what they don't know. You know, I think for me, yes, I am aligned with the thought, you know, you have to hire for your weaknesses. But I think in our business, there's not room for a lot of weaknesses.
That makes sense.
You know, you have to, as a chef, you got to know the numbers.
Yep.
You got to know service. You got to know all of it. I mean, we've all seen the restaurant, right, where the chef is so focused on the food. Right. Mm-hmm. And he wants you to write the menu with like a paragraph description underneath every menu item. Right. Because he wants to make sure everybody knows how much work has gone into it. I think that you have to. Yes, you have to hire people to cover the bases that you can't cover. But it's not an excuse to not know everything.
True.
You have to be able to speak to every facet of your business.
That makes sense.
Like Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades. Master of none.
There's more to that, though. I think it ends with it's better than being a master of none or something like that.
Yes, there is more to that.
Yeah, yeah. I forget how it goes. I shouldn't even mention it.
Hi there. It's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
So I'm a genie, right? And I can solve any restaurant problem that you have. What would you have me do?
I wish there was a way to rate the diner the way they rate us. You know, so we have this things like Yelp and whatever else. And, you know, I'm not coming out swinging against Yelp and the review platforms, but, you know.
I'll do it.
But, you know, it's this... it's where customers are allowed to leave these opinions on us. And contrary to popular belief, a lot of times they're right. Because perception is reality in our business. And if they perceive that the food took too long, food fucking took too long. Mm-hmm. If they perceive that the space was dirty or somebody was rude, that may very well be the case. But I think that also a lot of times there are customers that have no idea what the fuck they're doing when they go out to eat.
Yeah. None.
They
Absolutely.
Have no idea.
That is one of the many reasons we do the podcast is to educate people about how to dine, about what you're supposed to do in a restaurant,
yeah.
how to act, what to expect, and all those things. We talk about on so many different levels.
And actually shows. What happens
yeah.
in the restaurant, because they think that they can, oh, can you change this? It was like, I'm not a magician. What do you mean change it? It's made. It's in front of you.
It's done.
You know? Like, so there's consequences to everything, you know? Yep. Things cost money. They think it's like an unlimited thing where they can get more of this and extra of that without having to pay for it. Or they could stay as long as they want without actually having to understand that it's a business.
Or the people that don't understand the upcharge when they say, hey, I want palm puree instead of french fries.
Yeah.
And they don't understand why that now costs them money.
You can have what you want, but you got to pay for it.
For sure. And I'm like, do you know what butter costs?
Yeah.
Do you know what heavy cream costs? You don't need to know. It's my job to know.
Sure.
But that's why you're paying more.
Exactly.
Just trust that I know how to drive this car. Sit in the passenger seat. Enjoy.
And that's something that's very interesting. I like that you said that because I find you're absolutely correct that the customer is the customer. They don't need to know certain things.
No, it's not their job.
And it's fair for them to feel that something, you know, whatever their perception is, that is correct. However, they're not qualified to run your business.
Sure.
So there's, I think a lot of restaurants make the mistake of not really holding to what their policies and structure, standard operating procedures are that's best for the restaurant. They bend those and in effect make the customer the driver of what happens. And I think that's a mistake.
I think it's challenging, right? So we say something in my restaurants, and you and I might disagree a little bit, but the answer is yes. Now, what is the question? So if we can do it, we will do it.
Of course.
Because in my opinion, I think that it's just, there's too many other restaurants out there that want your money for me to tell you no. And as an owner, especially of small square footage restaurants, it's difficult for me if I can find a way. Case in point, I mean, my manager's here with me today. Somebody came in. We tell the story in all of our trainings. It's called the grape soda story.
Okay.
It was in my first restaurant, and I'm looking out into the dining room, and there's a family sitting there, and there's a young lady there, and I could tell there was kind of a funny interaction between her and the manager. So I called the manager over and I was like, what happened? And the manager goes, kid wants a grape soda. What fucking restaurant carries grape soda? I mean, let's be honest. Especially like, a French brasserie. Like, where are you going to find grape soda in a French brasserie? And she kind of like chuckled about it. Now, I could have easily said no. Did the parents understand? Yes. Did I mean, everybody knew why we would not have it, right? But I said, cool, there's a bodega right there. Take $5 out of the register, go grab it, bring it back.
Yeah.
Those people are still my customers today.
Of course.
Off of a 75-cent grape soda.
Yeah.
Now, I agree that there are lines, right? There are certain lines, right? Like sometimes a restaurant won't seat more than 6 people at a time, and that's just their rule. Mm. And I get it. If you've got a 10-ring burner in the back, right, and you've got 12 tables even out front, there's only so many pans I can get on at one time.
Yeah.
You get 6 people, sitting at a table. Cool. I can handle that many entrees at one time. If all of a sudden I make the decision to say, okay, I want to seat a dozen people at a time, how the fuck am I cooking for everybody else in this place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So some rules I get, but I think that more and more, especially in today's day and age, if you're not a super high-end experiential dining room and you're not something that's very cost conscious, I think to exist in that median delta, I think that you have to be willing to go above and beyond a little bit to keep those customers.
I get it. That seems very, I don't want to say fair. It's doable because the bodega is not, you're not getting in your car going down.
Sure, 10 minutes, right?
So that's the difference. I've done that. Danny and I used to work together, and I've never really told anybody this story, but we ran out of coffee beans for some reason. For garnish on, I think the guy
espresso
had
espresso martini or something.
At the time, Sambuca, it was a Sambuca. And he said, I said, oh, we are the coffee beans for the Sambuca. And he seemed disappointed. So I ran down the street to Starbucks and said, hey, can I get some coffee beans? Like, I know this sounds weird, but let me just get a couple coffee beans or whatever. And they gave it to me,
Bro, I would have reached in, put a couple out, thrown in my pocket, and walked out.
Oh. And so I came back and I offered it to him, and he was impressed. But it didn't really put me out because it was like, a block and a half away?
Yeah.
It didn't really put me out, but I imagine that I didn't come to work to disappoint anyone.
Sure.
Right? But there are plenty of times when I've told people no because of the circumstances. Not that I don't even like saying the word no. I find creative ways to to steer them.
We always tell our servers it's not your job to say no. It's his job to say no.
Okay.
It's a manager's job to say no. Not your job to say no. Tell them, let me find out. Because I want you to make as much money as you can possibly make, right? Make me the bad guy.
Yeah.
Chef's an asshole. I'm sorry. Sorry, yeah. Finish. I'm sorry.
No. That's. I agree with you. There's other ways to steer them somewhere. Yeah. As it turns out, this is what I can do. I always tell them what I can do.
Yeah.
And push comes to shove, I'll say, you know, if they're being a jerk, I'd say no. But it wasn't really what I came to work to do.
Yeah. Right.
No, you never want to tell the guests no, but they also need to. You also want to curb expectations.
Sure.
Because you don't want the biggest issue. Yeah. With football is. When people say yes to certain things that definitely shouldn't be allowed.
Sure.
And when that guest does come back in, their expectations are already out the window.
Sure, true.
So, like with anything, you give a kid a little bit, they got to take more 100%. And more and more.
100%.
So you have to have a good expectation while still making the guest happy.
And to that point, I think people also don't realize the way you ask for something will make a huge difference. Absolutely. On your experience.
Yes. Yeah.
I think so. In my restaurants, we call them clients, not customers.
Okay.
Because I believe that when you say customer, it's a very transactional experience. Sure. Like if I go to 7-Eleven, buy a bottle of water, there's my bottle of water, I'm your customer. If I go speak to my attorney or my accountant, that relationship is symbiotic.
Yes. Okay.
The success of that relationship is predicated upon how much I give them and what they give back to me. So we in my restaurants call them all clients.
Okay.
And we say that because, you know, what they give us, right, we can give back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you come in there, and for me, I have the best experiences when the best. Not because people know who I am or because I tip really heavy or anything like that. It's just because I will look you in the face and smile and ask you your name. Just common human fucking decency.
Yeah.
You know, I can't stand it when somebody comes in and, you know, they're trying to order from the waiter and they like won't make eye contact, or I will break up with the most beautiful women in the world if you're rude to a waiter.
Yeah.
And for me, rude isn't like actually being rude. Like if you can't make eye contact and be personable and be kind, I mean, I find I have the best experiences because that's how I carry myself when I go out. And I wish more people would do the same.
What you put out to the universe is what you're going to get back.
100%.
So, I mean, that's the perfect way to say it.
Yeah.
We're giving back that same energy.
Yeah.
And then usually we already know how to give it. So we're going to give it to an extent.
100%.
To where it's going to be enjoyable for everybody involved.
And some of these people walk in determined to have a bad time.
Yes.
Like, I can't stand it when somebody comes in, like,
they came in miserable.
Oh my God.
Of course they're going to leave miserable.
Oh, I heard so-and-so came in here and they didn't like this and they didn't like that. Cool, go fucking eat with them wherever they went to eat them. Yeah. I mean, if you came in here with a chip on your shoulder, it's not my job to get it off.
No.
Yeah. It's very interesting because that happens a lot where people come in and they're sour. They don't have a smile on their face, or at least a pleasant face, or a neutral face. They're carrying around some heavy stuff, and it's. But that's what we do. I find that there's about 8% of people that I can't help. So true. I just try not to get in the way of themselves.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yes. You know? And I'll just let them pass. And I think there's about 30% that I can turn. Mm-hmm. You know, and then the other, 62%, they're there to have a good time. Mm-hmm. They're there to have a good time. And that's the majority. I think that's why we're all in the business still, because the majority.
The Cheesecake Factory used to have a phenomenal training exercise where they would have random flashcards of just the most awful situations you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Somebody is meeting a friend or meeting a colleague for lunch at 2:30 p.m. on a Thursday. Okay, cool. Flip it over. Just got a phone call saying his mother had died. Can't miss the business meeting. So I say that to say that you don't know the bag of bricks that's on somebody's shoulder, right? But even with me, I've got a ton of stress on me. You know, I've got restaurants that I'm opening. I've got a lot going on, but there's still, I don't expect for people to come in, be like roses and sunshine, but just common human decency.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like stop, if I'm talking to you, stop looking at your phone and look up at me.
Oh, yeah. Ordering, I won't take an order if you're not looking at me.
Yeah,
you know, if you're
that means you need a minute. That means you need a minute.
Yeah,
you or need I, that time. Take your
right
time
when you're ready.
Yeah, or I tell them I can't hear you. You know, I get people that order like this, and maybe I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Sure.
You know, address me. I'm right here.
Sure.
And I do that. I address them. I look them in the eye. Kids, I address the kid. What would you like to have? You know.
Sure.
I do it all, but not about me. Now, what would you tell yourself is the scariest part of getting into the restaurant business? What's really the, I saw that face.
The restaurant business as an owner, especially, it will bring out the side of you that you want everybody to see, but will also bring out the side that you don't want anybody to see.
Ooh.
So do the work. Because when push comes to shove, you will rise to the level of your training and experience. And when I say training and experience, I mean the way you have trained yourself. Mm. If your first reaction is to shoot from your hip every time, like waiter comes up, I forgot to ring something in, you're 27 tickets deep on the board, I forgot to ring this in, and your first reaction is to unload, you're not going to get far.
Yeah.
That's a great answer.
So if you're going to be a, people say that, you know, people say, yes, chef, yes, chef, yes, chef, yes, chef, yes, chef, because you know how to cook. Mm-hmm. Chef means boss. Yeah. Chef means leader. Chef Absolutely. Means somebody that I can depend on.
Yeah.
You know, not just for the food, but who I can depend on to be a conscious or conscientious, even-keeled leader. There's room for all of us to snap off a little bit, but not really.
Now, what would you tell yourself about competition?
It's healthy. Competition is very healthy. Good business brings good business. You know, I want the restaurant next to the left side of me and to the right side of me to be slammed. One of the worst restaurant decisions I ever made. I opened a restaurant, beautiful restaurant, great food, reviewed well. The space was great. And my gut told me when I signed that lease, I said, Ashish, do not do this. There is not a restaurant on either side of you.
Mm.
There's not a restaurant. On one side, there's no restaurant at all. And then on the next one closest is three doors down. Why the fuck are people going to traverse all that to get to you? You're not opening a Michelin star dining establishment. Gotcha. So I think competition is good. I think competition is good. I think that there's ways to be very respectful of your competition. You know, if somebody tells you they work next door, before you hire them, call that owner and say, hey, what's up? This person used to work for you. They don't anymore. I'd like to hire them. Give me your thoughts. Something that I think we don't do anymore is check references.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, what have you learned about Monday, Tuesday versus Friday, Saturday?
You have to be more specific.
Meaning, what do you do on the slower days? Are you taking that time to...
You pray.
Okay. That's...
You get right with the Lord. I think... where restaurants lose it or where restaurants have a lot of trouble is everybody knows how to be profitable on a Friday, Saturday, right? If you're a decent restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the trick is you have to be learned to be profitable
on every, Monday, Tuesday. Yeah.
On every customer.
Yeah.
I have to be learned to be profitable on 10 covers the same way I learned to be profitable on 110 covers. Mm-hmm. Meaning that if, you know, it rocks my brain sometimes, I don't get it. You know, it'll be a Monday, Tuesday, you know, it'll be a slow night for the restaurant. They got 9 cooks in the bag. For what? You need that many people to cook for that many covers? Send some people home.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, well, you know, that's not really fair, whatever, whatever. Listen, if they don't like it, they have the option to go find another job. I don't have the option to go find another restaurant.
Yeah.
True.
So true. I think for me, the challenge is being able to have a business that is nimble that way. Where I can say, okay, hey, let's work for the money that we're making, not work for the money that we're hoping to make.
Boom. Boom. If I might get a little personal and you don't have to answer.
No, you're fine, good.
Yeah. What does fitness do for you?
It helps a lot. Yeah. It helps a lot. I think that being of strong mind and body go side by side.
Gotcha. Right?
I think that if I make that workout the hardest part of my day, everything else is downhill.
Nice.
And I think that, you know, being a cook is a very physical job. Being a waiter is a very physical job. Being a bartender is a very physical job.
Very physical.
You know, you're going up and down the stairs, you're packing ice, you're cooking. It's 110 degrees in that kitchen some days.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's no surprise why chefs and bartenders and waiters are dropping dead in their 40s. Because you want to smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, you know, tie one on at the end of the night. I mean, what kind of life is that to live?
Yeah.
So for me, fitness is a big, big portion of my life. And you know, what I will say about the getting off of drugs bit is there's a lot of people that think that restaurants are where you go to do that. Mm-hmm. Like restaurants are an environment where you drug and drink and whatever. And I can say honestly that it was not until I changed my life that I saw any success. And anybody who I know that sees success in this business today, they do not have a drug problem. They do not have an alcohol problem.
Gotcha.
You know, you're meant to be a part of the show. You're not the fucking show.
Yeah.
And you know, when we spend so much time and effort and money being kind to everybody else, as in our guests, why then are we so unkind to ourselves?
That's very powerful.
And I think that restaurants are the second largest employers of human beings in the world. Hospitality, sorry, not mm-hmm. restaurants. Hospitality employs the second largest number of people in the world, second to healthcare.
Oh, wow.
And that's taking like the military and the government out of the equation.
True, true, true.
But we as leaders in this business have a responsibility to create an environment that is safe and nurturing for these people the same way other employers do as well. If we want to be taken seriously as a business and as an industry and not be marginalized when things like COVID come up, where everybody just kind of took restaurants and set them aside, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Right? Like they'll figure something else out. Most of them are all working part-time jobs anyway, which everybody found to be not the case. Sure. But if we want to be taken seriously as an industry, we have to fucking behave seriously. My restaurants, all dry bars. Don't drink in my restaurant. Does it happen? I'm sure it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But the rule from the top down is it better not happen when one of my leaders or me see it, because you're just done.
Yeah.
We do team building stuff from time to time. There's no booze involved. My managers know that it's an immediate fire if it comes to leadership that you have been out drinking with your crew. So it's changing the culture.
Understood. So I had just a couple of rapid fires and we'll let you go.
Yeah, let's roll.
What is one dish that you would have to eat for the rest of your life?
Meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
I need it now.
I was not expecting that.
As soon as you said two words, I knew what my answer was going to be. Meatloaf.
Meatloaf. I love it. Up early or up late?
Up early.
Okay.
Up early every day. I'm up at 5:30.
Do you cut your burgers in half?
For myself?
Yes.
No. Sacrilege. Okay.
Which would you more likely to send back? Overcooked or undercooked?
Where am I?
High-end steakhouse.
Yeah.
Ooh, overcooked.
Last one. Married to a person or married to the game?
She'll be happy to hear this. Hopefully soon to be married to a person.
Awesome. Understood. Yeah.
What's next for you, my friend?
Lunch. Next for me, I don't know. You know, I've had some interesting opportunities present themselves to me in television and I'd like to see where that goes. Okay. I've also just written a book. It's called Just the Tips. Everybody should work in a restaurant. And it kind of outlines all the different jobs that I've had in the business and a life lesson that I've taken away from each one.
Nice.
I don't know how many more restaurants are in my future right now. It's becoming a tough world, but I would like to take what I know about life, restaurants, and try to share that with other people, because what good is knowledge and experience if you can't share it with others?
Absolutely.
That's what we're all about, is sharing. And tell everybody about your restaurant, where you are, and how to find you. And
Sure. So you can find us in Fells Point. We've got Duck Duck Goose.
I was going to ask you if you were in Fells Point.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, okay. I am.
Fells Point Diner. Yeah.
We've got Duck Duck Goose, which is our French brasserie concept. We've got Osteria Parada, which is our red sauce Italian. We've got Anchor Tavern, which is one of the coolest dive bars I've ever been inside of. So if you're in Baltimore, in Fells Point, please come check us out.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We do this for you each and every week. I'm Marlon Joseph, the Modern Waiter.
I'm Danny Villan. Subscribe, people.
We'll see you next time.
Later.
This is what I believe. Yo, I believe in getting them chips.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.